Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast. Check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. Hey, we got a brand new podcast that just dropped. If you're a fan of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament, which you might be if you listen to this, I know we got a lot of crossover on the audience. Well, Chad Bird is a part of a new podcast called Hidden Streams. It's like a 15-minute devotional podcast where they're going through Psalms and there's original music going with the psalm reading, and then Chad does like some Old Testament commentary and meditation on it. It's really great. I like it. I'm as someone who's like, you know, not the most devotional guy. You know, I get up and I stumble around. I'm trying to find the coffee, get my kid to school, get back to the office, go right to work, and you know, I'm just not that devotional. But this is a kind of thing when I'm making that coffee and I'm sipping it, I can carve out that 15 minutes and It's real peaceful. It is like a stream. It's great. It's a great way to start the day. Maybe it'll work for you. Maybe it won't, but you should at least check it out. Hidden Streams. Check it out on all the podcasting platforms that you subscribe to. Guys, go over to the events page at 1517. We got a city event coming up. We just got done with a great event in Houston. Went fantastic. Thank you to everyone who came out. I got to meet a number of you that have been listening to the podcast. They're all looking around trying to find out where Eric was. He wasn't there. But I was there and there's Chad was there. But there really was, I mean, more and more as I go places, whether it's, you know, speaking, you know, city events or just other speaking engagements, people mostly, the most common, thing people say is like, man, it's weird to see that voice coming out of an actual face. So, you know, I feel like they're disappointed in the face, but what can I say?
No, Dan, don't be so hard on yourself.
What can I say? But, hey, if you're in the Las Vegas area, Eric will be there. If you're a listener to this podcast, I will both be there hanging out. You can put faces to those voices right there and then. We'd love to hang out with you March 21st. Just go over to the city events page over on the website, 1517.org, and you can sign up. It's a sign up and show up kind of deal. It costs you nothing. We're going to spend the whole day with you. We'd love to hang out with you guys. March 21st, we're going through the whole book of Galatians. It's going to be a great time. Also, if you're in Germany or Sweden, we're going to be there the first 2 weeks of May doing two conferences talking about Christian freedom. So we'd love to hang out with you. I will put links in the show notes, and you can come hang out. So if you're over there in Europe, particularly Germany and Sweden, man, register up. We'd love to hang out with some of our European listeners. All right, Eric. That's all the things that we got to talk about, at least all the things we're going to talk about besides getting into this text.
That sounds good, man. I just got back from California yesterday, and I was there to officiate my goddaughter's wedding. Did that. It was awesome. Got to preach at a great church in Fontana, California on Sunday morning. Just got back yesterday, and still, I woke up this morning like just a little laggy, just a little bit, little lag, but I'm ready to get into this text. All right, we are at Luke chapter 12, verse 13. We left off here last time. We pick it up. It says, someone in the crowd said to him, that would be Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But Jesus said to him, man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you? And he said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a weird one.
Yeah, it's a strange request. I mean, my guess is it sounds like this is probably a younger brother whose older brother would have been given the inheritance, who wants to appeal to Jesus's authority as a teacher, as a rabbi. He wants Jesus to come in and be like, hey, give your brother the money that he's supposed to be getting. Or maybe he wants more than what he's already gotten, because after all, Jesus goes on to say guard against covetousness. So it could be that he's already gotten some, and maybe this guy is like, I want more. Give me more. And Jesus is not going to have any part of that.
Well, it's also, you know, it is not Jewish custom to divide the inheritance between, I mean, this isn't how it worked then.
I mean, I think the firstborn did get 2/3.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then everybody else had to split the rest of the third.
Now it could be that somehow this older brother was getting all of it and wasn't going to even give him a certain amount that we don't have the details. All we know is that this guy comes in looking for Jesus to be a lawyer and Jesus is not interested, which I love. because all the time you have people coming up to Jesus asking him, hey, is it lawful to do this? Or what does the law say about the other thing? Or in this case, hey, can you play judge in this situation? And Jesus is like, look, man, I'm not here to do this stuff.
Jesus is always on mission. Like he never loses the point. He's always focused on what he's here to do. And he uses this, of course, as an opportunity to teach. It appears, because he says, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, that this man indeed displayed covetousness to Jesus.
You have to love that a guy will come up and say, hey, tell my brother to do the right thing. So you think that you have this, you think you're operating in maybe some righteous indignation. Tell my brother to do the fair thing, to be fair. And when you go to Jesus saying, tell this person to do the right thing, he flips it around and says, stop being so covetous.
Yeah.
So this is how the law works. You want to live by the sword, you die by the sword. You live by the law, you die by the law. And that's how it goes. You walk around thinking that, you know what, I have a reason to be, I have a right to be upset with this thing right now. And, and you go to Jesus, try to get him to lawyer up for you. Nah.
That's why it says he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. So clearly, Dan, this is telling us that we cannot have any Roth IRAs, that retirement accounts are bad, that pensions are bad, and that we ought to liquidate our accounts instantly.
Of course.
I've heard this text used to teach against like having life insurance.
Okay.
You know, I've heard this text used to be like, hey, you know, you can't be just collecting seashells on the seashore.
Oh, yes. You've
heard this stuff.
This is basically Jesus saying, like, I know you heard that proverb about look at the ant and how he stocks away food and stuff. That's a load of crap.
No, that's not what this is saying, folks. What this is saying is basically the rich man had the issue is that he is depending on these things for his life and for contentment and for his happiness. The issue is where faith is. This man has placed faith in his things and therefore has the problem.
Well, you see it in this. It doesn't say, and he turned to his wife and said, wife, we've really done well. I think we're going to be able to retire soon.
Yeah, no, I love this. I love the funny language. Yeah.
He
soul.
Says, soul. You have ample goods laid up for many years. Now, hold on. Your soul doesn't have jack laid up. So what the problem is that he is not only depending on these things to get him through life, but he is saying that like my soul can be at rest because of all I've achieved. Now, this is hugely wrong. Your soul cannot find rest in anything that you do, store up, achieve, or acquire. This is the problem.
We see evidence of that reality all the time in our world. People that get incredibly rich are incredibly successful and never find contentment in it. There was a Jim Carrey graduation speech given a few years back, and he said to the crowd, I wish every one of you could become rich and famous and find out that it doesn't work, that that's not the thing.
Yeah, he called it a terrible search.
Yes. And here's a man who's obviously, I mean, I think at one point he was the highest paid actor. I mean, $20 million a film, I think he was getting, and, you know, clearly has made more money than most of us will ever see in our lifetime. And yet he's going, no, this isn't it. And that's really the issue. This is a man who's looking to these things to be his source of his identity and his comfort. And he hasn't laid up treasure toward God. He hasn't trusted in God, and that's where his real treasure is meant to be found.
Yeah, this isn't he's not doing this to say that building big barns is forbidden, but he is saying that building big barns is not what will put your soul at rest.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so, and there is this at the end here, you know, this thought like, hey, your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?
Right.
Like there's, you know, and the answer in this it seems to be for this man is nobody. He doesn't seem, because again, he refers to himself. He only speaks to himself. He's not leaving anything behind for anybody. And so it's a purely sort of selfish pursuit.
Right.
And so Jesus said to his disciples, this is all same passage, folks, same time. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you are not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you.
Yeah, so I love the way this ends, because you might think that what's wrong is to be concerned with providing food and clothing and shelter and this sort of thing. He's not saying that. These things aren't bad. He says your Father knows you need them, that these are actual needs that you have. As always with Jesus, when he says, don't be anxious about this thing or that thing, all he is doing is trying to get underneath your anxiety and alleviate it by saying, I know you need these things. All of your worry and stress about these things, you can't add one moment to the span of your life. But yeah. I know you need these things and can provide it. It's supposed to let you breathe out and relax a little bit, because you know that God is going to take care of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, I think actually there's two ways that people tend to err when it comes to this passage. There's a way of preaching this passage where it can seem like Jesus is coming down on them. Like, don't be anxious. Don't be anxious. When I don't hear that at all. I think he's comforting them. I think he's comforting, especially in the context of what we just read. I mean, he rebukes this guy who's been storing up all this stuff for himself. And so the alternative is like, well, what should I do? Like, and Jesus continuing on in the story, or it really bouncing off of the story, says, I don't want you to be anxious like that guy was, trying to store up stuff for yourself. I want you to know that I am a good father, that like I'm going to provide for you. I'm a good brother, and my Father's a good father. He knows what you need. So don't look to these things as your source of comfort or security, because God knows you need them. He'll provide them.
Yeah, and this is a matter of him telling you not to be seeking these things. So in other words, this is the goal of your life.
Yeah.
Is to achieve these things, to have these things, to find security in these things. And that's why he contrasts it with, instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you.
Yeah.
And not as like a reward system for seeking the kingdom, but as you seek the kingdom, and if you are in the kingdom of God, your Father is going to take care of you.
Yeah, it really is, and this is true. I mean, I've experienced this before where I've been, you know, consumed with anxiety about this or that thing. But when I finally just sort of released it and, you know, in prayer, well, then it turns out that these things will come. These things, it's about control. Anxiety is about control. And when it's just a matter of acknowledging who really is in control and who isn't.
Yeah.
And so he goes on, verse 32, fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom.
Great verse.
Yeah, love it. Love it. You can't, that's just pure gospel, friends. That's a gospel statement.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally telling you, fear not, little sheep. Mm-hmm. It is your Father's good pleasure. This means that God enjoys giving you, gifting you the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Notice it doesn't say, fear not, little flock. Your Father is willing to let you enter the kingdom. Yeah. That would be kind of nice.
Begrudgingly.
Or let you earn your way in, you know, let you stand in line. No, it is your Father's good pleasure to give it to you. Mm-hmm. It's great.
So when that is the case, like when you're sort of anchored in that, hey, I'm the child of a Father who loves to have me around, who loves to have me in his kingdom. Well, then look what you just might be able to do. You're freed from the anxiety that comes from your possessions. And Jesus says, sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Now, of course, you could take this, do something crazy, say, sell everything you own, give everything to the needy, go do stuff for the Lord. It's not what he's saying. I mean, you could know that's not what he's saying by how he ends it with, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. However, if there is some possession that has your heart, I recommend you get rid of it.
Yeah. There's a freedom. It's all freedom here. It's all just, I mean, you know, possessions can possess us, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this happens all the time with any number of things, you know. And so when our hearts are set on the fact that we're just recipients of a good kingdom from a very good Father who loves to give it to us, well, then we're set free from being possessed by the things that we have. And we're not so afraid if we don't have them anymore.
Yeah, Jesus is not against you owning things, but he doesn't really like things owning you. And this is the whole thing, because things owning you will become a source of anxiety. It's not just that he's sitting there like, I deserve to. Yes, there's covetousness and idolatry, but the main thrust of this is when things own you, when possessions possess you, this is the source of much anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so that
because you're trying to keep it. Correct. You're trying to make sure you don't lose it.
Yeah, or you get more of it. And so what he is encouraging is more of an open hand. This is why I would even say when he says, like, give to the needy. It is a good exercise to give to the needy. It's a good thing to, like, let go of some things every once in a while. Mm-hmm. It's good for them, but it's also good for you. That you don't just hang on so tightly to everything.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, the famous statement of Jesus recorded for us in the book of Acts. It is more blessed to give than to receive.
Right.
And it is. It just truly is. And so we move on to verse 35, still in the same context here. Stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. And be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast, so that they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will dress himself for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. Now, let's just stop there. How backwards is that?
Yeah, this is a weird thing, right?
That doesn't happen. So the promise is for those who are awake when he comes, he's not going to put them to service. He's going to get down and serve himself. He's going to serve them. This is what awaits you, Christian. I mean, Jesus, this is an end times passage, so to speak. And Jesus says, what's coming for those who are mine is me actually serving them. That's an incredible thing.
He's talking about Advent. This can be first or second. It remains true for both. So the coming of the Messiah, those who are ready for him to be there, and he finds them awake and waiting for him. And also the second coming, those who he finds awake and waiting for him the second coming. Now, what you can't do, obviously, from the context, Eric, is say, and this is why we should be very anxious about the second coming.
No, exactly. Yes, this is exactly right. And unfortunately, because the passage is isolated, that's the way it feels when it's preached a lot of the time.
You're like, oh my gosh, I better be ready. I better not fall asleep. Like, wait a minute. Like, the whole context of this is like to reduce your anxiety. He's not trying to make you anxious about something, unless it's anxious in the good way, in the anticipation.
Like with anticipation,
But so what he's saying is, and so to be awake is to know that you are in that little flock that God is giving the kingdom to, and so you stay dressed and ready for action and keep your lamps burning means that the kingdom of God is where your treasure is. That you're not trying to store up everything here because you think this world is going to go on forever and ever and ever. You're going to live forever in this world. You're not. To stay dressed and to be ready is to say, whether I go to God or God comes to me, whichever it is, I know that this is temporal. And so my treasure is elsewhere. And that treasure may come for me at any time.
I have to remind myself of that basically every time I get on a plane, Dan.
Exactly.
Every time I get on a plane, I just have to resign myself to like, yeah, you know, it's possible that this could crash. And unlike a car crash, like there's probably no coming back from the plane crashing. And so you just kind of have to resign yourself like, yeah, I mean, this could be the last day. You know, that's a possibility. And I think it's good to live in that sort of mindset, not in any sort of morbid way, but just to recognize like no day's promised to you.
Yeah.
And that's really what he gets at in the, as he goes on here, he says, if he comes in the second watch or in the third and finds them awake, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have left his house to be broken into. You also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. So again, there's that, the emphasis is like, just know that any time could be the time. It could be today. It could be 1,000 years from now. We don't know. But the point is, yeah, be ready.
I love that Jesus is willing to compare himself to a thief.
I know you do.
I love it so much. It's a premise of a book that will be released at some point. It's the book that I'm afraid to release. But it's been a long time in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this imagery that he uses, and he uses it not just here, but multiple times.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I come around. I steal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you steal?
What's he steal, Dan?
He steals sin and shame and guilt and souls.
That's right.
This is what he does. I mean, he is going to come and steal away his people.
Yeah.
He comes the first time to steal away sin that doesn't belong to him. It's not his.
That's right.
He just comes and takes it without you asking. He doesn't come and be like, would you like me to take away your sin? He does not ask this. He just does it.
So he's not a gentleman?
No, man. Breaks into the world and just starts stealing all the horrible things that this world consists of. Second advent, he's going to come and steal away his little flock. And so it's great that he uses this language and he's comfortable with it.
Yeah. So it's just this, the whole context of the passage so far is just saying like, remember your primary citizenship. Remember whose you are, whose kingdom you're of. Remember not to get too attached to this life, because this is not what you're meant for. It doesn't mean that it's bad to have possessions. It doesn't mean it's bad to have relationships in which you love and you're loved. It just means that we recognize that everything here has a temporal nature to it, and that we're made for something much grander and much bigger. Peter said, Lord, are you telling this parable for us or for all? And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time?
Thanks for being so clear, Jesus. The answer, this is a simple question. What are we doing here?
Well, this is the way Jesus so often addresses questions that seem to have a very straightforward answer. You know, he gets parabolic and he starts using imagery. And the imagery is pretty clear. I mean, we understand what he's saying. Like he's, you know, who's the steward that he can, you know, set over his house in the meantime.
Well, I just think it's, you know, Peter asked this question. And then as soon as Jesus was like, who then is the faithful and wise manager? And like, he just looked over at John and was like, here we go.
Or he thought, me, I'm Peter. I'm faithful and wise. I'll do it. I mean, based on Peter's track record, you can see him being like, oh, that's me.
I know. I'm not too holy to admit. that if I asked Jesus this question and he gave me this answer, my eyes would roll right out the back of my head. I'd be like, oh, gosh.
But here's what he says. Blessed is that servant, verse 43, whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Being a faithful and wise manager, that is. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he does not know and will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. Woof. And that servant who knew his master's will but did not get ready or act according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what deserved a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone to whom much was given, of him much will be required, and from him to whom they entrusted much, they will demand the more.
This is a very different way of answering a question. But the answer is in there in this sense. Peter wants to know if this parable that he told is for them or for everyone. The answer is it's for everyone, but you should really pay attention to it because I'm going to put you guys over a lot.
Yeah. And there's in the warning here, it's interesting, like what really gets them in trouble? What gets the servant in trouble or the manager in trouble? It's that the manager starts taking advantage of the people underneath him because he just starts to assume that the master's not coming back. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know like what really gets God angry, it's when the people that are called to be shepherds of the flock, under shepherds of the flock, take advantage of the flock.
Well, it's when shepherds beat sheep.
That's right. I mean, if you want more of that, look in the prophet Ezekiel, and you'll find him talking against the shepherds of Israel that had fleeced the sheep and taken advantage of the sheep, and that makes God very, very unhappy. And so that's really what is being talked about here. Like, if I put you over my church, don't take advantage of those people.
And and you see that. There's masters and there's servants and he divides it all up. And this is sort of those who teach are held to a higher standard and this sort of thing. This is all throughout even
James
the Old Testament.
Says that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a common view in the New Testament. And that's why, James will go on to say, like, let not many of you be teachers, not because he's against people being in charge, or doing that. But it's just a warning to be like, yeah, there's something significant about your calling. You've got the care of souls. In your charge, and that needs to be taken seriously.
Yeah, and that is not a super gospel-y way to end this podcast, but...
Do not be anxious super gospel-y.
But don't be anxious about it.
Your Father knows you, and he knows what you need.
Yeah, what is the answer, to all of this stuff? Because you're like, oh, man, this sounds pretty... Like, I could get some anxiety over this in a hurry. I mean, shoot, Eric, you are a shepherd, right?
I am.
I mean, do you feel the anxiety rising up in you right now?
I definitely am aware of the ways in which I have fallen short. And the good thing about that, when I hear texts like this, is it causes me to once again depend on the mercy of God for everything in my life, including the ministry he's given me.
The point of this obviously ultimately becomes like, oh, I'm going to have to go back to that chief shepherd and live this life of repentance. Yeah. All right. That is all the time we've got. That is 30 minutes, guys. If the podcast has been helpful to you, you can support it by going over to 1517.org, going to the donate page, and you can become a monthly contributor. Thank you so much to those of you who do that. You make it all possible. Eric, I will see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.